is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever.
Transmission Chicago Line is brought to you by Burger King, the Cleveland Clinic, the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas, RF Bank and Trust, and Raw Star Assurance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chicago Line, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. I trust you're doing well. If you want to give us a call today, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316, or 325-4259, 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp us on 439-3043. That's 439-043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. It's typical for me, I imagine almost all the talk show hosts, to scan the news, listen to the news, observe, watch what's happening in the parliament, because you're trying to stay abreast of the national happenings. So I did that and made a few observations today that I thought were interesting and that could be an opportunity for discussion and for some learning for us today. One of them goes back to yesterday. On today, I saw a photo of and the Minister of Foreign Affairs and the newly appointed Bahamas High Commission to London, and the leader of the opposition, as they are all in London for the coronation of the new king and his wife, Camilla, who will become queen. You know, it's interesting that queen consort, is that what it is? Someone told me, you know, a king can make his wife a queen, But a queen cannot make her husband a king. So Queen Elizabeth was queen for almost 70 years. And in all that time, her husband, Philip, was never king. He was the husband of the queen. So a queen cannot a king make. But a can make a queen. So I was teasing someone and saying to them, and you know, women say they want to be treated like queens in their relationships. Well, to be a queen in a relationship, you got to have a king. And therefore, maybe the man needs to be treated like a king so that you can be a queen. Anyways, that's an aside. So somebody asked me what I thought about the fact that the prime minister and the leader of the opposition was going to this event, notwithstanding that there are people who are calling for our detachment from the British monarchy. calling for us to abandon that and become a republic, I guess is what the choice is. And I indicated to them this: every leadership position has attached to it a ceremonial function, every leadership position. So if you, as leader of your family, as leader of a school, as leader of a church, as leader of a civic organization, as leader of a company, as leader of a community, as leader of a nation, there is attached to that leadership responsibility a ceremonial function, which is external to the organization, meaning it is a position that brings the necessity of networking, that brings the necessity of representation, and it also brings the feature of symbolism. You are the face of, you are the symbol of your organization. You are the one that does a great deal of in networking with external stakeholders of your organization. And you do ceremonial things, which is that you represent your organization where you feel, or the organization feels, that representation is meaningful. It says it could be representation to show regard. It could be representation to bolster diplomatic ties. It could be representation to negotiate outcomes, etc. But there is a ceremonial aspect to that representation. So we have not gotten rid of the monarchy of England as our head of state. We have not. We might want to, some people, we might desire to, we may want to, may do so one day, but we have not done so today. We have a governor general who is the king's representative in the country. All right, the parliament of the Bahamas consists of the king and the legislators. This is not ceremonial, this is a fact of our constitutional structure. So if your monarchy, if your head of state, the head of government is the prime minister, the head of government is the prime minister, the head of state, the head of the Bahamian state is the king before the queen. And if your head of state dies, there is a regard that you expect to pay to that. And when she is replaced by a king, if there is a ceremony that is accompanies that, and that there is representation by the prime minister and the leader of the prime minister is the head of Her Majesty's government, and the leader of the opposition is the leader of the Her Majesty's loyal opposition, His Majesty. So that they would go, I don't have any difficulty with that. I understand that one day when and if we decide we don't want to have that association anymore, okay, no problem, it's done. And then you could question, query whether to go. But in the present circumstances, it is to me totally understandable that they would go. It is a part of the ceremonial component of leadership. And it is something that all persons who have ever been in leadership understands as part and parcel of their function. A head of government, a head of state dies in the world. How many leaders, prime ministers, go and attend? I mean, what can you do if a leader is already dead? You can't do anything. Why do you go? You go because a part of your ceremonial representation in diplomatic circles is to show that deference, to show that regard, to ensure that the relationship between you and those countries continue to be nurtured through your demonstration of respect and regard for the fallen head of state, head of the government. So, you know, if they didn't go, I wouldn't, that they went, I'm not burdened either. Did you say learning? you're my Volodantin. Yeah. So that's the lesson from that one thing there. That's the lesson, is that leadership has a ceremonial component. So if you are somebody who does not like to have to go to receptions and meetings and conferences, to, and even some that are mostly just rhetoric rather than accomplishing things, if you're not interested in that, don't sign up for leadership. Don't do it, because it is part and parcel of it. And anyone in leadership, any union leader, any head of an organization, anybody who's headed anything knows this is just a part of the fray. It's something that you do. Now, some people like to travel, like to be up and down and about, and so that fits nicely with them. But that they have to do some of it, you know, that's just part of the course. That's just part of it, right? All right. So the other thing is, I read in the newspaper where the Minister of National Security was announcing that the prison project has increased by $50 million from $40 million. $50 million from $40 million, so for a total of $90 million for the new prison. Right? Now, he explained that this increase is because they are adding some amenities to the prison, the prison construction. Says some features that it will have. And when my document comes up, I'll get those new things for you. He also indicated that this is a private-public partnership involved. Okay? So the new $50 million addition, he indicated, would include making a Bahamas Technical and Vocational Institution classroom block, that it would include a psychiatric wing, a hospital unit, and it's going to have solar and renewable energy and so forth and so forth. Okay, so this is what he indicated. And he said that this is going to be a public-private partnership. What that means is, well, how public-private partnerships often work, or public-private partnerships, is that the private sector, a private sector entity or set of entities, would put the money up to construct a public facility, public infrastructure. It could be a bridge, it could be a hospital, or it could be anything of that nature, an airport, a port. And what they would do is, because no private individual for profit purposes is going to put money away and don't expect some money back, be sure of it. Not only they will get their money back, and some interest included, okay? So what they will do is, over a period of time, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, the government will pay in revenue, either revenue from directly from the consolidated fund, or from revenues generated from airport fees, as an example, or revenues generated from some pool or these kinds of stuff. They'll pay a certain sum of money to those people over that period of time. And in that period of time, that private entity or group of entities will get back their invested money plus interest. So they will not lose on this. And with the government, you don't lose. You hardly could lose because the notion is that the government ain't going to collapse. The government isn't going to fail. You're going to be able to get your money. That's the notion, right? So there is, according to the minister, a contractor already secured for the prison. That's the reading I concluded from what I saw. And that this contractor is securing the funds for the construction. And the minister indicated that the government isn't paying for it, and so if the people don't deliver, then they get to lose. Now, over time, as the government is paying, if they don't do what they're supposed to do, then they got to have a talk. Let's be clear. A public-private partnership does not free the government of risk, not in the least, nor does it free the government of cost. It is really a unique form of borrowing for the government. Okay, so let's be sure. Let no one suffer under any delusion that taxpayers will pay back this money for the construction of the prison and some. That's a fact. Now, and we'll pay it back entirely because the prison does not generate any real revenue. So therefore, all the monies that are going to be paid to the private entity that builds the prison is money that has to, the bulk of it, or if not all of it, will have to come out of the consolidated funds and their fund, and therefore will be funded by taxpayers. So the government is not without cost in a public-private partnership. Secondly, it's just a better cash management arrangement in the way of loan for the government. That's what it is. It's a cash management arrangement. The government doesn't have to go and borrow a lump sum of money and lay that money out. The government can simply let the other people do what they have to do without getting involved with that money up front, and then pay the money back over time to the entity. Now, if the entity messes up, yes, they can lose some money, but so would the government. You say, well, how? Well, why are you building the prison to begin with? Why are you building the facility to begin with? You say, well, if they mess up and you don't get to do what you're trying to do, well, that you have opportunity cost associated with that mess up. And therefore, you now have to go back to the market and try and finance what wasn't done. Things could have changed in the marketplace. The interest rates could have risen. Costs could have risen. And now you are having to pay a cost for the thing that you were doing higher than if it had been done well the first time. So this is the state of play now. What I found intriguing was, well, first let me tell you, how do you go from $40 million to $50 million on a project? Listen, like $50 million is not a little, this is the public's money. Okay, this, you remember the stadium, the baseball thing, I think, where the Minister of Public Works indicated it would have risen now by an addition of $30 million, etc. I mean, these are not small sums of money because it isn't $30 million. It isn't $50 million. It is $50 million financed over time. So therefore, $50 million plus interest that you are going to have to pay back. Okay? How do you do that is the question. How do you just increase a sum of money like that? And as far as I'm aware, there was no detailed communication to Parliament that says, you know, we relooked at the circumstances at the prison and the new facilities that we were producing, and an assessment made by X, Y, and Z determined that it would be more cost effective to the government to do this, that, and the next thing. We therefore looked at that and determined with the private part, it should be increased, the capital budget for it should be increased to X, Y, and Z, and I'm informing the parliament. How do you do that? How do you get that much of an increase? This wasn't a 50% increase, you know. This was more than doubling the original budget. So I wanted to tell you that, one, it can't happen. Well, it, as far as I am aware, it cannot happen, saving and except that the cabinet of the Bahamas has looked at the original proposal and decided to do this $50 million increase. The cabinet of the Bahamas has decided that anything above $50,000, you're looking at the tenders board and you're looking at the cabinet. So presumably that is what has happened. Cabinet has decided to double the budget and cost and construction of the new prison. So don't blame the Minister of National Security, or don't say he did that. You have to say the government has decided that increase. So that's the first thing. It's a cabinet decision. It's a government decision. And unless somebody could tell me otherwise and show me otherwise, that is what I have to consider. Now, again, that increase is being done without, as far as I'm aware, any official communication about the decision to do so. The other thing is, I noticed that according to the minister, the contractor is out securing money. Okay, so the contractor, so there's a contractor. There's someone who seems to have been agreed to do this prison construction. And I remind you, this is public business. This is a government project. And so I didn't hear any announcements about the contractor. Or is there a consortium of contractors that are doing this prison? Right? It'd be interesting to know, is it a Bahamian concern? Or is it a foreign concern doing it? Is it a specialist correctional facilities contractor, or is it a local contractor, or a combination thereof? I don't know. It would be useful to know. And I think the public ought to know, you know, if a contractor has been selected already. And that'd be useful to know. Who is it? I mean, it's a massive project and it's a meaningful project. It's a very important project. I think anybody with knowledge of the prison, present circumstances would agree that the Bahamas should have a new prison, and one that can better secure and accommodate the kind of things we would like to bring about a more orderly society. But who's that contractor? You're listening to Z-Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. When we come back, we'll continue our discussions. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. After a hurricane or storm, get the Nassau Guardian's Hurricane Guide. The guide will tell you where to purchase building and cleaning supplies, waste disposal, medical care, which auto shop to go to after driving through flooded streets, and much more. The Nassau Guardian's Hurricane, everyone knows what to do in the event a hurricane approaches and after it departs. Take advantage of this double insertion opportunity plus 15 radio commercials. Contact us today, 302-2300. 302-2300, or call your account executive. Will you be prepared?
Babe, you mashed the car?
I mashed the car. The lady run into me mashed the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Samantha's always on point. She doesn't miss a thing. When she signs up for any insurance policy, she reads all the fine print. She knows what's covered, what's not covered, and she's aware of her deductibles. Pays to know your policy. Review every insurance policy so you know what you're covered for. This message was brought to you by the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, please feel free to do so on any of the following numbers. You can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. The governor of the central bank is saying that the Bahamian economy is expected to grow around 4% this year, you know, under ordinary circumstances would be quite remarkable for the Bahamian economy under ordinary circumstances. Let me help you appreciate what I mean by that. So your economy over the years have grown like this. So let's look at, say, from 2010. Right? So in 2010, your economy grew in real terms, that's taking account of inflation, grew by 1.5%. Just a number now, 1.5%. In 2011, grew by 0.6%. 0.6%, that's less than 1%. So the year before, 1.5%. The year after, less than 1%. By 3.1%. The year after that, by negative, this is 2013, negative 2.9%. It contracted, it shrunk by 2.9%. And then grew the next year, 2014, by 1.8%. And then the next year by 1%, and then the next year shrank by a negative almost 1%, 0.9%, almost 1%, right? And then grew by 3.1% in 2017, and then in 2018 by 1.8%, and then by 1.9%. So you notice the trend. You notice that in those periods of time of the Bahamas, in those 9 years, the Bahamas' economy grew by 3% twice. And every other time, it grew by less than 2% and mostly by 1% or under. You understand what I'm saying? So when I tell you 4% it would in ordinary circumstances be robust than we have seen in the last 10 years. Right? Now, however, growing by 4% is only good to the extent that it means that your recovery from the downturn of the pandemic continues. Continues how? Continues in a declining manner. Okay, you're going back to normal. Listen to me again. The economy of the Bahamas is returning to that very modest growth rate that it used to have prior to the pandemic. It's going back to below 3%, below 4%, probably without some other things happening, back to around 1.something%. So it shrank by 23% in 2020. Almost a quarter the economy shrank by in 2020. And then it shot up by 13.7% in 2021. But what has been happening since then? Then it's been going back down to more normal growth rates. None of this is surprising. You go back and listen to some of our shows, you would have heard me talk about this, and to indicate that you would probably end up back around this 4%. 5% mark in 2023, and then by 2024, you probably back at 3% around that or something. And then if something remarkable doesn't happen, you'll be back to around 2% and thereabouts the year following, which would be your normal growth rate1999 was the last time you had a really fantastic growth. That was 12.2% in 1999. After that, you have been growing by these very modest margins. So no surprise there. What did surprise me was that the governor actually launched into, not surprised. Not let me not say surprised, but the governor did suggest that unemployment is probably higher than pre-pandemic levels. And I imagine the governor would be saying that because maybe the economy has not achieved fully pre-pandemic economic activity because some companies' businesses damaged in the pandemic are likely not to return. So there are lots of people who may still be unemployed, even though it may actually work against what the governor is saying, that the unemployment level is higher than, probably higher than pre-pandemic. You could have in the last 2 years so many discouraged workers because of the pandemic, people who aren't actively looking for work, that they wouldn't be ordinarily counted in the unemployment figures. Now, here's the thing. The governor's postulation on the matter, my postulation on the matter, really doesn't matter. And would matter even less to the extent that you have the Bahamas National Statistical Institute that will be in the field doing this, that they do to help us appreciate in a scientific manner, in a structured manner, what the unemployment level is. So I will discount any unemployment figures for the time being, mine or anybody else's, because we will shortly, we should soon enough be able to capture that information through the Bahamas National Statistical Institute. You'll note, we call that in census years, labor, unemployment, ideally extracted to some degree from the labor numbers, I mean, from the census numbers. But in any event, the department, the institute should be able to capture that important information for us at some point. And so, okay, so we could speculate for the time being, nothing sinister about that, but hopefully soon enough, we'll have some concrete information. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabaga Lang, your host. We're going to take another break. We'll be back after this break.
Take a stand. Take a stand.
Wednesdays just got a whole lot better. Introducing Whopper Wednesdays at Burger King, now some 50 cents, including that. Yes, you heard that right. This Wednesday, you can indulge in the classic flame-grilled Whopper you love, made your way for only $5.50. Stop by your favorite Burger King Nassau location this Wednesday and enjoy a Whopper for only $5.50. Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
It's so rewarding. With my Fidelity credit card, I get the best prices with price protection. Earn and redeem freedom points at my favorite stores. Get cash back. Plus, I booked a cruise. Get your Fidelity credit card today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Get ready to celebrate our 50th independence with a golden jubilee. The Road to 50 presents the inaugural Jubilee Day. It's a day to celebrate the Bahamas and the Bahamian people in grand style. We're jump-starting the Independence Party on Recreation Grounds. Come and explore the cultural village from 4 to 9 p.m. and take your seats by 6:30 to witness a fantastic cultural show. It's all about the black, gold, and aquamarine. Wear your colors to show your pride. Schools all across the Bahamas will be taking part. This day is made to celebrate you. It's Jubilee Day, Friday, May 5th. For more information, visit CelebrateBahamas.com or go on social media and type in Celebrate Bahamas.
To be a Bahamian, proud to be a Bahamian, proud to be a Bahamian, yes, God gave this land to me.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, everybody, everybody, come take my hand, we'll walk this road together, through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, you're not alone, holler if you feel like you make it down the same road.
Issue.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join me here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. This text says, good afternoon, sir. Where can I find info on growth of the economy? Very good show as usual. Thank you. Actually, if you Google search GDP growth of the Bahamas, GDP growth, there are a host of sites, IMF and others, and you can see year-to-year movements in the Bahamian economy. So just Google search GDP growth of the Bahamas. And many of these sites will get their information sourced from the Bahamas National Statistical Institute. So these are historic numbers. Any forecasted number, well, that's on their models. That's not on the institute. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Excellent show. Excellent show, man. I really like attending your university.
Thank you, my friend.
I just sucking it up. I remember when C.B. Morse had a seminar some time ago. He referenced a number, and he says, I can tell you to the nearest 10,000 the amount of cash that are in the pockets of every Bahamian, if they were to pull it all out of their pockets and put it on the table, every Bahamian walking around in their pocket. Now, at that point in time, he said it was about $4 million. I don't know how he derived at that figure, but I don't know if you know of a formula to do so. That's my first question. My second question is, seeing that you're talking about the growth of the economy, how much does the narco money affect the growth of the economy positively or negatively in the reporting as to, you know, how much the country has earned? Those are the two questions I have.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Well, firstly, there's no formula for accurately determining how much money in the pockets of Bahamians. You could take a wild guess at it, but there's no formula for that. Any guess at it would be only that, it'd be a guess. So for instance, if you just take the employed population of the Bahamas and say that's 170,000 people, and let's say on average they have $10 in their pockets, well, that will be $1.7 million. And let's say they on average have $20 in their pocket, well, that would be $2.4 million. And if they have $30 in their pockets, then you're talking about $5+ million. So it's not an unreasonable thing for Reverend Watts to say, but it's just pure speculation and guess. And I can't say that speculation would be wrong or right. You know, it could be higher, it could be lower, but, you know, you could bet on balance Bahamians are walking around many, many thousands of them, these $10, $5 in their pockets. The second question related to... I'm getting young. I'm sorry. If you want to call back and give me a second question, I don't remember the second question. This text says, Mr. Lang, when I heard about the announcement of the proposed prison contract, I too was very curious for several reasons which you make mention. Firstly, I wonder which company would commit their assets for such a long term. Listen to me. If you have money and the government wants you to do a project, I could guarantee you, for the most part, put your money there if the government is prepared to enter into a contract with you to pay you back over time. Go right ahead. Well, that is essentially what all these people have done that have loaned money to the government that now is our national debt at $12 billion. They have put their money to the government and said, pay me back over time with interest. That is not a risky proposition at all. I'm sorry. That is not. That's an easy one. If I had the government say, Chicago, build me a hospital, and I will pay you back X amount of money over 20 years, 30 years at an interest rate, I would, and the interest rate was reasonable at all. Please, in a heartbeat. That's one of the least risky, most secured investment you can make. That's what your National Insurance Board has been doing for decades. So I wouldn't wonder about what company would commit their assets that way long term. I wouldn't wonder about that. What I would wonder about is who is the company? That's it. That's different. It's different. It's who is that company? And he says, then I thought it must be really worth the risk. It's one of the least amount of risk. Can I help you with something, folks? Most governments, you've got to be a really shady, shady, unstable government. Most governments are really low risk entities to lend from. First of all, the government doesn't age. It doesn't age, and it has the power to tax. It means it has the power, legitimate power, to coerce other people to give it money to pay its bills. That's why people lend to governments. That's why countries have 100% debt to GDP ratio, 130% debt to GDP ratio, 160% debt to GDP ratio, 260% debt to GDP ratio. Why? Because you're the Japanese government. You can age. You'll be around a long time. Where's my money going? It's going nowhere. So that's not a risky proposition at all. So I'm now curious as to what the final cost would be to the taxpayers as opposed to a traditional contract. That's a great question. That's a great question. And that, to get that question, what you would have to know is what the payment terms would be for the private entity putting up the money. So it's going to be the money they put up plus some interest. So what you need to know is what that interest rate is. Is it 2%, 3%, 4%, 6%, 7%, 8% compared to what a traditional loan would fetch, right around 7, 8, 9%. So that's what you need to do to be able to do that comparison. So I believe this business of awarding contracts must be standardized, concertized, and publicized. Too much changes every time administration change, ministers execute coming up with revolutionary ideas. Kidoki. This text says, good day, Mr. Lang. Why is the project jumped from $40 million to $50 million? Are they building two jail buildings? I said, the minister said they are adding a hospital wing. They are adding a BTVI classroom block. They are adding a mental health facility, et cetera. So now, whether that's all worth $50 million, I can't judge and tell, but I can tell you what he indicated. Okay. We have some more text here. Okay. We have had in the Bahamas a good recovery from the hardship of the pandemic. We have had a good recovery. But the Bahamian economy's health, is still challenging. Now, there are areas in this economy where people are doing well. You heard the car dealerships say that things are going fantastic. 40%, I think, increase in sales, they indicated. The hotels are doing robust business. The airport has seen 30%+ increase. Now, the Bahamas has had a robust recovery from the pandemic, and that robust recovery began in 2021, early the second quarter of 2021. And so we needed it. We need it. And we hope that it continues. We are normalizing back to more modest growth levels. And that is simply not going to cut it for us. We need to be able to rev that economy's growth up to about 3.5-4% on a sustainable basis. If we can get that rolling for about 10 years, if we can do that, that's a huge challenge. But if we can do that, we will lift Bahamians out of this doldrums that they are in economically, out of this tightness of disposable income that they are in. And we're going to talk about some of that when we come back from the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lai, your host. We'll be back after this news break. Take a stand.
Everybody, come take my hand, we'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone, I'll up if you feel like you've been down the same road.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Wrap with almond milk, no whip?
That's me, thanks. I know what I want for my coffee and for my wealth management plan. That's why I rely on the personalized care I get from my dedicated RF Private Wealth Advisor. With RF, I get a customized strategy designed for what's important to me, like protecting my assets, evolving with changing markets, and making sure my money keeps on growing. For tailor-made wealth management, I trust RF Private Wealth.
Learn more at rfgroup.com.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing the knife to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Well, he fooled with Joe girl.
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't back down for nothing. So that means he got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you want?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. We gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and
hang on Joe's side. Him and he boys coming for me next.
Alright, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know. And nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I avoid?
All you gotta do is call them or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then if you get the pin from them, and they can claim a reward later using that same pin.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you said.
Calls 308-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
The sixth edition of the Bahamas Games are on the way. July 7th through the 15th. Get ready for inter-island sporting competition in the spirit of unity and camaraderie. Which island is gonna win? It's the Bahamas Games. Our nation, our talent, our games. And look out for the B Games crew coming to your island soon. For more information, call 809-1242 or visit thebahamasgames.org.
I'm not afraid. Take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shibago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers to do so are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4216. 59. You can text us on 4224796, or you can WhatsApp us on 4393043. That's 4393043. So let's suppose by some fantastic means that we were able to get our economy to grow by, say, let's say 4% a year for the next 10 years. If that were to happen for us we could see the economy grow 15 plus billion dollars, more than that actually, which means we would see income to ourselves of an additional $5 plus billion perhaps, right? The question would be, if we were able to do that. Now, let me say, it's a huge challenge to do that. We cannot be what we are today and do that. We cannot do what we do today and do that. We cannot achieve that without significant participation of international capital and investors. We can't do that. We need Bahamians, but we need international capital investors. But it would be a challenging thing to do, but we can do it. I mean, it can be done. It can be done. It can be done. It would require a change in how we day, meaning one, we would have to be a more efficient people. That's in the name. You cannot get to 4% growth. We cannot get to 4% growth and have the lethargic, not really engaged, non-excellent performance in the workplace that we see in too many spaces and places. In too many. Like, you can go on jobs, you can go to some of these fast food restaurants, and I've done it, I'm right here in the Bahamas, and you can see some employees, man, they are kicking their butts trying to get those orders out and to make sure people can have correct orders and so forth and so forth. Then you have people on there, man, listen, they like, dude, I only here because I don't have no other choice and I need this money, but I ain't waking my butt off for none of y'all. And so leave, because I only here doing you a favor, right? Those people are the kinds of people who they are not helping us produce more in the economy. They're not. People who have sour faces, bad attitudes, and offer poor customer service, they have no idea that they are shrinking the possibility of better economic growth for themselves and the whole country. Why are they doing that? Well, you think about it. What do you do when you have a marvelous experience somewhere? Do you not go more often? Do you not maybe stay longer and therefore end up spending more? And if you are going more often and if you are spending more, what are you doing? You are generating additional activity in the economy. And that spells growth. Why? Not because some new investor came, but simply because the experience you had gave you more motivation to spend. And that produces economic growth. And so we could increase our economic growth by a 0.5%, 1%, simply by improvements that people are having. I think about people who spend so much time waiting in banks, spend so much time waiting in insurance companies, in doctors' hospitals, in law firms. This is time spent waiting that you are not employing toward greater productivity. Okay? And you see things that can be done in a day, 2 days in the workplace that's taken 3, 4, 5 days, a week, 2 weeks to do. And what that means is you are exacting costs for returns you can't see for far too much later and therefore don't get to produce as much in a time as you can produce. And all of this is compressing the potential growth of our economy. And that's why we have in economics what's called the potential growth curve. And if you look at it, you will see that it differs from the actual growth curve you get because it reflects the fact that you could have, you're not getting. And I'm not suggesting there's some utopia of output that we could achieve and we should therefore all be trying to have heart attacks. But there's no question, you and I both know. Come on now, your text been telling me if I lie. You know that generally speaking, the experiences that you are getting as you move about this economy, having service experiences in particular, some products experiences too, is sure it just leaves much to be desired. And because of it, you're not driven, you're not motivated to kind of like, boy, I can't wait to go back to that place. You're not. And therefore, it's suppressing economic growth. But if by some means we are able to get that efficiency improved, if we are able to attract that additional Bahamian investor, there are lots of Bahamians sitting on dollars who, you know, they don't see goodies and they're not spending the money, they're not investing that money. It's just sitting there collecting dust for the most part, or maybe marginal interest, or maybe they put in government stocks and government bonds or something. But it's not being used to generate new jobs, generate new income and so forth in a meaningful direct way in the economy. And so we don't get that. But let's say we get that happening. Let's say we get the foreign investors more attracted to the Bahamas, generating new projects in the country for employment and income growth and so forth. So let's suppose that's happening and that gets to happen in the Bahamas for the next 10 years. The question is, what are your priorities in that kind of economy? What would be your priority? What would be your priorities in that kind of economy? Not the government of the Bahamas. I'm not talking to the government yet. Get the government for the moment. I'm not talking government yet. I'm talking about an economy with growth, an economy with employment, an economy with income growth. And, you know, people are really doing well, reasonably well. I'm talking about in that economy, what would be your priorities? Please tell me. 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text me at 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. What would be your priority in an economy like that? See, for success to come, if you wait for prosperity to come, if you wait for growth to come, and don't have priorities laid out before that, you're going to get caught up in the same thing too many of us got caught up in the last time prosperity came. Because we've been through prosperous periods in the Bahamas. We've been there. We've had those periods where we've prospered. And our priorities dictated what we achieved in those periods. If when the next one comes around, what will be your priorities? That's what I'm asking. What would be your priorities? That's what I'm asking. That's the conversation we're now having. That's a part of the learning that we are now trying to get at. Right? You had this period from 1970 to 1970-80-ish, kind of, where you didn't do too bad. It was up and down, some of it driven by narco dollars. But, you know, then you had another little period in the 80s, you know, for a little bit where you had some growth, but you get the next 10 years of growth, what would be your priorities? I can't get one text, can't get one call from nobody. Damn, get not nobody to tell me what would be the priorities. Come on. This is very important. We got a call on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. Did we lose them? Yeah, we lost them. Try and call back. Can't get nobody to text me, tell me what their priorities would be in a sustained expansion of the Bahamian economy. I hope that's because you're busy and you can't answer. I hope, but tell me, I'd like to know what would be your priorities in a situation like that. Because guess what? The priorities you ought to have in a situation like that are the same priorities you ought to have in the present situation. Same priorities. What are they? What would they be? This text says a Joseph plan. Yes, sir. That's certainly a part of it, a Joseph plan. Saving, storing away for leaner times, saving. So savings ought to be a priority. That's for sure. That's the Joseph plan. Joseph, remember the Pharaoh had a dream. The dream was about 7 days of years of plenty and then 7 years of famine, 7 years of leanness. And Joseph told him that's because 7 years of plenty coming and then 7 years of famine coming, and you need to take, put away some stores for the famine days, and that is correct. A priority should be savings. And you and I both know, and I'm not criticizing anybody, I'm putting this on all of us, we have been poor savers in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. I'm not saying everybody. Some of you have saved well. Some of you have done well in savings, and so God bless you and wonderful. But too many of us spend every nickel, every dime we get. And then you know, things too expensive. If you never intended to save, and therefore don't save, don't blame it on things too expensive. If you never intended to save, had no plan to save, and didn't save, don't blame it on I don't make enough money. Nonsense. If you intended to save and sought to do all you could to save, but found that just couldn't do it, given the expenses you had, necessary expenses you had, okay, then, I'm with you. I'm with you. Someone texted me just now, and I am so sorry. I haven't a clue what I did, but I erased it. So please text it back to me. I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened just now. This text says improving education. For who though? Who? Improving education for yourself? That could be a priority, yes. Improving your skills, your education, yes, that could be a priority. So we can grow economy by using our land for agriculture. What will the population look like in 2050? Listen to me. Don't get mad, Bishop. Right? Anyway, yes, okay. You could grow your economy by using our land for agriculture. I'm not gonna get in that argument today. No problem. It says land for my kids, education for them, and expanding my business throughout the Bahamas, throughout the Bahamas and the Caribbean. Very good. Very good. Very good. Right? Land for my kids, education for them, expanding my business throughout the Bahamas and the Caribbean. Very good. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Says investments in stocks, bond, property, long-term, and businesses, and decrease my debt. Bang shang a line. Right there. Okay. So here's where you want to stop. Listen to me carefully. This is where you want to stop. If you have debt, your first priority, if you have interest bearing debt, especially if they're like credit cards or high interest consumer loans and that kind of stuff. If you have those kinds of debt, then your priority should be debt reduction. Because if you get rid of a credit card debt that's charging you 10%, 11%, 15%, you will be saving that expense in debt payment if you pay off that debt sooner rather than later, right? So debt reduction should be a principal priority. It also frees you psychologically. It gives you now, even if you get to a more comfortable place of debt servicing, where you're like, if you've been able to grow your income to the extent that you're more comfortably servicing your debt and therefore still able to save, then you're doing yourself wonders. But if you're able to reduce that debt substantially, you know, if you're able to reduce that debt substantially, then you're going to be much better off. Now, it could be that if you have an income earning property that you have mortgaged out, if the income from that is paying the mortgage, you're good. If you could pay that off, you could, fine, wonderful, no problem. But that's better. It's these debts that we are paying for, car loans, consumer loans, and them, where we are not getting anything in return from them. Now, if you use those kinds of things for educational loans for your children, that's good. The returns for that, you ain't gonna see in cash in your hand per se, but in the development of their lives and the returns to their development, that's wonderful. But debt reduction, that's the first priority, debt reduction, right? And then the second priority is savings. Savings in which way? First of all, savings towards some emergency funds for if something happens. Some emergency funds for if something happens. And then savings for long-term old age and retirement, right? Where you're not going to be able to earn as much income on any income at all, and you have to have something. You want to have something to be able to live on in those leaner income earning days, right? So what do we say? Debt reduction, savings, savings for retirement, and a part of that savings for retirement might be investing some of that savings in very carefully in stocks and bonds. And if it's me, I am not doing that investing my own self. I'm going to brokers to be able to do that. I'm going to RF on them to be able to help me do that. CFAL and those who can help with that too. So you kind of can do those things. Let these professional people go ahead and do that for you. You put a steady amount of monies in their hands and they are able to do that for you. And over time, that money will grow and be there for you when you get older. You can invest in property, but again, you can invest in property as a matter of speculation, saying, okay, I'm going to invest in this, hold it. Maybe it appreciates over time and I can sell it later on and use that cash to live off of in my retirement. Or I can give it as an inheritance to my children and that kind of thing. So, you know, but the ultimate thing is you got to have a plan. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yeah, good day. How you doing?
Right here, man. How are you?
Everything is good. Man, for the country to get out of debt, right? With our food bill. Back in the day growing up, everyone knows Exuma is famous for onions. Long Island, cheap and stuff, right? So if we could get a PPP going on and make an industrial thing that you could grow on package one time and export, or even take your cell phones, then start exporting.
I mean, okay. Let me ask you a question. Who's the we are going to do that?
Like I say, PPP.
No, but PPP, you can't just tell me PPP. PPP is a private-public partnership. So you're suggesting to me that the government of the Bahamas should go and find people who are going to put up monies that the government is going to turn around and pay them over the long term to be able to do some agriculture project?
No, not to say pay them. Like I say, you get in partnership with it that, hey,
That's what a PPP is. What do you mean is what you want us to do is find investors in agricultural industries throughout our islands, right? That's what you're saying.
Yes. toward all of y'all.
Yeah. And I love how you said it's not just a farming, because honestly, if we relied only on growing stuff as a means to get us where we want to go, it's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. But what you're saying is go into the processing too.
Yes.
Yeah, that's where the higher value is for us.
Yeah, and then that's how you could form co-ops with that.
Mm.
You know, and then you'll invest more people invest, and there'll be more, and you get dividends every month or every year, depending on how it's set up.
Well, let me tell you, friend. You definitely have a reasonable theory, but I can tell you, I'll be honest with you. Given our mindset today, you and I will be here 50 years from now. And insofar as agriculture is concerned, nothing would have changed.
Why would you say that?
Well, I can say that based on the history. Look at us right now. You're talking about it. You're talking about it right now. But what are we doing? I mean, just look at it. Look at us. Look at us now. Who is going into agriculture in any meaning? I took a stab at it. I had a chicken farm growing hundreds of thousands of birds.
You don't have it anymore?
I do not. I'm trying to do it again, but I'm saying it's hard. Let me tell you what the biggest struggle was, my brother. You see all those people selling chickens to you in the Bahamas who import that chicken from abroad?
Mm-hmm.
They want to continue to buy cheap chicken rather than buy chicken that may cost them a bit more produced here. I'm not asking you. Ask Abaco Big Bird.
Yep.
It is hell for farmers in this country to be able to sell their wares when you could buy it cheaper abroad.
We like to buy cheap. That's correct. And cheap being
the well, everybody, cheap being everybody does. Everybody does. So I'm not going to condemn these producers, these suppliers, because that's business. Buy low, sell high. I'm just telling you, that's the challenge. And the government had a policy that says that they are supposed to buy a certain percentage locally. But man, listen, they do everything in their power to get around that.
Yep. So they're supposed to buy a certain percentage locally.
Yeah, they're supposed to. That's what the policy is. They're supposed to buy, for instance, 30% of their stuff locally. So let me give you an example of what they might do. House was so slack, they would come to you and buy like 10 cases of gizzards.
Mm-hmm.
And take that to agriculture and say, I supported this local farmer, and then go buy 5 containers of chicken from Panama.
Yeah.
It's hell, my friend. I'm telling you, I tried to even convince these local suppliers. I said, listen, I mean, let me give you a real example of something that happened to me, because I'm so glad you called with this interesting subject area. A hotel, a major hotel in Grand Bahama, called me on Sunday afternoon. I was in my bed watching a game and said, Shivago, we are out of chicken breast. Do you have any breast? I had to go out of my bed, down to my farm, and get them the cases they need. You know what I asked them? I said, how come my chicken is good enough for you to buy on the weekend, but not good enough for you to buy during the week?
Exactly.
But that's how they go, because you know why? And I know why. I knew why. Because it was cheaper where they were getting it from. I tried to convince them. I said, listen, if we can keep an inventory of chicken locally, when you have challenges like this, then we will be able to supply you. But if you can't give us enough business, well, how are we going to stay in business?
Yep. But you think now it's because of the cost? If we want a scale, a large enough scale,
mm-hmm.
to say maybe a dollar difference, I guarantee they would buy local.
Well, no, but see, I shouldn't have to. We're not going to achieve the scale, my friend. We're not. But that's fine. Listen, Brazil produces multiple millions of chickens at a time. Multiple millions. We're not going to be able to do that. So the extent to which they could charge cheaper, we're not going to be able to do that. But it shouldn't have to buy 30% locally. My cost shouldn't matter to you, because the government is saying, I want that security in my country.
Exactly. They should be able to purchase at 30%. But let me ask you this. Where the money going if they're buying 30%?
Where the money going?
Yeah.
I told you to Brazil and Panama, and them they buying it from abroad.
No, hear me out. They said buying the 70% from away, and they said they supposed to be buying 30% locally, right? There, if they only buy 15%, when that 15% really supposed to be buying locally, where the money going?
Away, because nobody, because if agriculture doesn't do a proper job of enforcing its policy, nobody's checking.
So we need the whole, these agencies seek to fire them.
Absolutely. The only way for farmers in the Bahamas to really thrive meaningfully is for agriculture to really enforce its policies. If that doesn't happen, listen, any thought of having a robust agricultural sector is a pipe dream.
Yeah, because we can't rely on tourism too much longer.
No, we can rely on tourism for a very long time. Tourism ain't going away, my friend. Listen, put that out your head. Tourism is the second largest industry in the world, and it ain't going nowhere. People ain't not gonna stop traveling, my friend. Don't let anybody tell you that.
No, but I'm saying we have to really diversify back in there. Usually tourism and banking was getting ready to take over tourism.
Never in the Bahamas. Absolutely not. Listen, this is my area of study. Never. Tourism has been your golden goose. It shall be your golden goose for decades to come. Decades.
I take your word.
But trust me on that, my friend. I hope to be here for at least a couple more decades so we can talk about it back then.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for calling, man. Appreciate it. This text says, you use professionals because I'm not savvy enough to fully understand how to play the market. I am leery of these trading that people are doing on their own. Yeah, no, I wouldn't. You need dollars trading on your own. That's fool's gold. Fool's gold, right? You want to be able to use people who are professional, who can pool your resources with other resources and therefore generate better returns, right? So if you're savvy enough to go and trade on your own, fine. But that's fool's gold for far too many people. It's much better to use these professional people. So how is it cheaper to buy chicken from abroad than locally? Does it have to do with manufacturing? We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z-Live. I'm Shabar Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together to have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Tired of paying too many bills and loan payments each month?
Shrink your monthly debt payments down to one easy payment with our debt consolidation loan.
It also has a built-in savings that pays you 5% interest.
Inquire about our debt consolidation loans today.
Call 356-7764.
Wednesdays just got a whole lot better. Introducing Whopper Wednesdays at Burger King Nassau. Get a flame-grilled Whopper for only $5.50, including VAT. Yes, you heard that right. This Wednesday, you can indulge in the classic flame-grilled Whopper you love, made your way for only $5 in Nassau location this Wednesday, and enjoy a Whopper for only $5.50. Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
The sixth edition of the Bahamas Games are on the way. July 7th through the 15th. Get ready for inter-island sporting competition in the spirit of unity and camaraderie. Which island is gonna win? It's the Bahamas Games. Our nation, our talent, our games. And look out for the B Games crew coming to your island soon. For more information, call 809-1242 or visit thebahamasgames.org.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. This Texas, how is it? Cheaper to buy chicken from abroad than locally? Does it have to do with manufacturing? Well, you don't manufacture chicken, but there's an easy, a simple reason, okay? So let's start off with this fact. Say Brazil has a population of 214 million. 214 million. Okay. The Bahamas have about 400,000. Even if you add the tourists, let me add the tourists and say that's 7 million, right? So let's say the Bahamas has a population of 7.4 million, including the tourists. The Bahamas' population is 7.4 million and Brazil is 214 million. A Brazilian producer, therefore, has 214 million people to sell to compared to your 7.4 million. So when the Brazilian guy goes to the producer, when the Brazilian guy, I have to go and buy a chick from the United States of America, a day-old chick. That chick is going to cost me 93 cents. Right? The Brazilian guy, even if he were buying chicks, while I'm buying, let's say I'm buying a chick for every Bahamian tourist, I'm buying 7.1 million chicks. And the Brazilian guy buying 214 million. Well, what when I get my chicks for 2 to 93 cents, what do you think the Brazilian guys can get his millions and millions of chicks for? They can sell him that chick for 60 cents, 50 cents. He's already ahead of me. Like me, I'm paying for my fee $53,000 for one house. For one house. What do you think the Brazilian guy is doing? If he's buying, he's not paying $53,000. He's paying $30,000 because he's buying millions and millions of more tons than me. And he isn't even buying it. He's going to make his own feed on his chicks. And so that's going to decrease his cost even more. He's got a population of 214 million that the power company is selling to. You think the power company, let me see, Brazil's fuel rate is 14 cents per kilowatt hour. Between 14 and 16 cents per kilowatt hour. What is mine? 32 cents. Right? On every level conceivable, the Brazilian has us beat because of scale. Not only that, if me and the Brazilian has to invest essentially the same kind of money to build a house, a chicken house, processing plant. So let's say that's $2 million. For me, I'm not going to be able to sell as many chicken as him. This man can make 10 cents on every pound compared to me and still make his money back because he's selling to millions and millions and millions and millions and millions. I got to go 30 cents or so. I'm not going to be able to sell that much. So, yes, my friend, it is much, much cheaper to buy abroad when you're buying from people with scale, whose labor cost is lower, whose electricity cost is lower, whose cost of goods is lower, because their first costs on purchases are lower. So there's no comparison there. It says, thank you for sharing a little of your experience. We say things so casually about people in business or going off business with no real understanding of the hurdles business owners go through. Government may make laws to support local businesses, but if it is not properly enforced, it doesn't help. Absolutely. Let me tell you an experience I have. This is an actual experience. I'm in the chicken business now. It was called Harmony Poultry Producers. Beautiful, beautiful birds. You know, we did. I was really proud. I was really proud of having gotten that up and running. And I'm talking about commercial scale, right? Our chickens were the hotels and the food stores and Super Value and all of them, right? But I had invested with my partner's monies in this operation, and we made at the beginning some critical mistakes. They were on me. They were on me. Critical mistakes, and that caused us to fall behind. In addition to the challenges we had with selling locally. So let me give you an experience of something that happened to me. We sold some chicken to a supplier. And as I indicated, they don't want to buy from you because you are going to charge them a higher fee. There's no question, a higher price. There's no question about that. You know what they did? They took the 5 cases and let them sit in their hot warehouse for a little while because they knew what was going to happen to them. And then they turned around and called agriculture and said, we sold them bad chicken. You know what saved me in that instance? Agriculture came by, but agriculture said, you know what we said to them, but we got, because we would send samples to agriculture, so we got some out of that same batch. Ours was good. How come yours was spoiled? Because it was in the same freezer. Right? So, you know, but that's what they did. So what we had to then do was we had to adjust our delivery so that we did our inspection of the chickens before they left and had to sign off and what have you had them. When we delivered them there, we had to have the receivers do an inspection of them. And then we had to watch them deliver them to the freezer, signing off as they did. Why? Because we didn't want to get caught again with people accusing us. Oh, man, it's rough. It's rough because the industry, like many industry, agriculture, many food industry, is price sensitive. It's highly price sensitive. Why is it price sensitive? It's price sensitive because it's being sold to households. You are price sensitive. So they want to be able to have as much profit as they can get with a thing that is in high demand that you are sensitive to price on and not as sensitive to quality on. You don't care if your chicken has been sitting in a freezer for 6 to 8 months and have a high saline content because they had to put a lot of salt on it to preserve it so that it could travel halfway around the world on containers. You don't care about the fact that the chicken grown in the Bahamas naturally is fresher, doesn't have salt in it because you don't need it. You didn't need to add salt to it because it was being sold locally and quickly, but it's going to be a higher price. So if they buy a chicken from the local producer for $1.65 a pound, when they could get it from abroad for $1 a pound and save 65 cents, they could still sell that same chicken to you for $2.20 a pound, $3 a pound, and make that ton of money and don't care. Because you don't care whether it was bought here or not. And so that's really the nature of the market. You know? It can work only if the government enforces it. That's the only way it can work. Says, no reason we need to import meat. We can grow economy by using our land for agriculture. Yeah, you said that before. We don't have to import anything if we're prepared to pay the price. We, Bahamians, see, let me tell you something. Remember when we were having all those debates about the WTO and the possibility of, say, a Walmart coming here, even though whenever you go away, you shop at Walmart? Why? Why you go to Walmart? Because you like the price as well. If you go away and shop at Walmart, if Walmart in the Bahamas, that's a problem. But if the only way a business can survive that relies on Bahamians is by Bahamians voting for the business with their money. So imagine that you went to the food store and said, listen, I am not buying chicken that isn't grown in the Bahamas. I am not. But if you did that, what do you think would happen in the food store? They would demand chicken grown in the Bahamas. But they know you will not do that. You don't care. You, if the chicken from Purdue, you don't care what, you don't know what Purdue doing with the chicken, and you don't care. You just go and buy the chicken. And so that's why agricultural products produced at home will continue to, in the mean, get the votes of Bahamians to say, listen, this is grown locally. It's all natural. It's fresher. Yes, it's a little pricier, but I'm prepared to do that because the health benefits and the benefits otherwise, to me, is greater. But it will take some time to get there, if we ever do. But that is what would be required for those businesses to survive. Hey, why are you cussing on there about WTO? You're still regarded as a cuss. Yeah, I ain't cussing. You see me talking about the WTO, man, that battle? I'm 55 years old. I'm finished with that battle. Y'all join, you join. You don't join, no problem. I'm done. I'm done with that battle now. Maybe some younger, fresher, brighter mind with more graces than me could help. It's a great show as usual. What about lime? Why is lime so expensive? We can't grow lime. But ain't nobody grow it. Not commercially. You could grow it. You know, I mean, see, these things are, when you see something not happening home, all you need to know is whoever has money to invest in it don't believe they can make money to do it, or they have, their experience has been you can't make money doing it, and therefore ain't nobody doing it. If people thought they could make money doing something, they didn't try. Bahamians are, especially in agriculture area, are fed up. Some of the people who invested, they're fed up. It's hard. You see Bahamas Food Service and them, they major wholesalers. Major BWA, they major wholesalers. The food for store chains and so forth, if you can't get them to support the local producers, it ain't gonna happen. And I can tell you one thing, in my experience of being in that business, Rupert Roberts' Super Value was the most dedicated and committed to supporting the local producer. But hands down, I met with Rupert Roberts, others have met with Rupert Roberts. See, he said he was hands down the best. Cosright was also committed to doing so. To be honest, not to the extent of a Rupert Roberts, but they were committed too. So you had some people who definitely were trying to do their part and to comply with the policy. But oh my God, some of them other folk. I could call some names, but I won't do that right now. You have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Hi, Mr. Lang. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing okay. And yourself?
Beautiful. I'm doing great. Thank you. Two things, please. Number one, you said something earlier, the earlier part of your show, referring to the Parliament. I believe you said the Parliament consists of the House of Assembly, the Senate, and what else did you say, please?
The monarch.
Right, but specifically, what did you say?
The parliament is the monarch.
Yes, sir.
The legislators and the legislators and the legislature and the House of Assembly.
Right, but specifically, I believe you did say the king. I'm trying to find because I was looking for it.
I said monarch because the monarch is either the king or the queen. So,
no,
yes,
but,
when
Continue.
So when the queen was queen, she was a part of your parliament. And when the now that the king is king, he's a part of your parliament.
Right. But what does our constitution say? The constitution, doesn't it refer to Her Majesty, not the king?
It doesn't matter. It says Her Majesty or her representative. No, it says Her Majesty or her successor. When we swear,
let me tell you why I ask you that question, which is very, very important. We have the Governor General of the Bahamas, who would have been, according to the Constitution, Her Majesty's representative, not the King's representative. In order for bills to be passed into law, it requires bills being passed in both parliaments, well, let's say in the House of Assembly, in the Senate, and signed into law by the Governor General. That would not apply anymore, because if we have no more...
Ma'am, listen, please. Because I have no little time left, and I don't want people to walk away with what you are saying, because what you're saying is in error. Let me tell you why it's an error. Because yes, when the Governor General is sworn in, when the members of Parliament are sworn in, we swear allegiance to Sethod. And her successor is the king. So that does not arise.
Laws that bills to be passed, it requires Her Majesty's representative.
Listen, if you want to continue on this argument, no problem. Thank you very much. You have a wonderful evening and afternoon. You have a wonderful evening. Folk, that is not an argument at all. Not an argument. It's not an argument, okay? You have the queen and her successors, and now you are the king, and it will be his successor. So that does not arise at all. Okay? Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shabab Alang, your host. So glad you could join us today. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. God spares life.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.